Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Big Show. I am your Ewan Rankin stand-in, Jeff Gamet. And just to get this out of the way right up front, Ewan's schedule went right out the window. And he is crazy busy, like so crazy busy. He's not going to be able to join us probably until the beginning of October. So that means that I'm probably going to have a lot of apologizing to do.
No, that means the crazies are running the asylum now.
Yeah, yes, that's right? Exactly what it means. Yeah. So anyhow, Ewan has not abandoned us, or so he says. And once he can get his schedule back under control, then he will be back with us. So Ewan, you'll be missed. Missed even more if you remember to tuck and roll.
I think Atlee's put him in his garden. He's just buried him.
It's possible.
I mean, it's possible.
It's possible. Hey, speaking of, maybe he'll join us someday too.
Still digging the hole.
Anyhow. Excuse me. So awesome panel today. Holy crap, this is so cool. Chris, how are you doing? Haven't seen you in forever.
Yes. I apologize to all my fans on this side of what I like to call SMR podcast West. Y'all way outside on the other side, but nonetheless, I missed everybody. Just been scheduled busy, but I'm glad to be here today. I'm glad I was able to make it work out and come hang out with my peoples today.
I'm glad to. The sexiest
voice on the entire internet.
Oh, my God. If I was lighter,
I'd be blushing. You make your tree sweat?
Hey, that's what we do out here.
Yep, that's how you roll. Yep, and this is exactly why I've missed you. Seriously.
My man.
Yep. Patrice, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm busy as ever, and I can't believe it's already Thursday. I don't know where the week went. I mean, it's just been crazy.
I know. It feels like we did this just a couple days ago.
Yeah, exactly. And I've had zero time to like even look for news. And today I went in and was like, is there anything going on? Like, did I miss something?
No, just make up a story. And we'll roll with it.
Okay, I'll do that. Let's do that.
Awesome.
That's what I do.
Yeah. We did a whole show that way for April Fool's Day.
We did.
And the awesome thing was we got well into the show before some of the people that were watching realized we were just making it all up, which was awesome.
That was awesome, yeah.
It was. Speaking of awesome, Rich, how are you?
I'm good, thanks, Jeff. It's good to be back.
It's awesome to see you. And please tell me about your shirt today.
This is Bowser, who is sitting on a warp pipe like a toilet and pulling out gold coins. There you go. It's not too classy, I'll be honest. I've got classy. There's a little bit of toilet roll there.
But it's hard to get classier than gold coins. Even if you're
there is that. And honestly, if I could poop out gold coins, I would be bragging about that. So
the same. You know. Yeah. All right. Well, our master at being classy, Muller, how are you?
Fine, thank you. I've had quite a busy day. I've been all Wyler. What?
You've been stalking Tom Cruise. That's what you've been doing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I did. I actually did see him today. Well, not from, well, from away. He was, they got barriers up to stop people getting involved in the filming.
Is it?
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Is it to keep people out or is it to keep Tom Cruise in?
I would say to keep Tom Cruise in.
It's probably both. I think he tried to get to me, but they kept pushing him back. No, you know, he's too famous, mate. leave Muller alone.
Was he fighting the bull at the bull ring?
No, he did land his helicopter in someone's back garden. Apparently, Baginton Airport was closed, so he decided to land in someone's garden. And then he gave the kids a helicopter ride and posted photographs with the family. They got one hell of a big garden, though.
Small helicopter.
Well,
I mean, Tom Cruise isn't that tall, so.
Oh, that's true.
I think his helicopter's normal size, though.
Okay. So he sits on a phone book. And kids, those of you that don't know what a phone book is, go ask your parents. The joke would be funny to them.
Yeah, the yellow pages.
I should give everyone a wildlife update. We haven't done that for a while. The winds have changed. So the air is mostly clear here again, which means that we're seeing more animals out and about. Lots of bunny rabbits. And there's one deer that we see every year that it's always a surprise that she's still around, because she has one of her back legs is lame. It was broken at some point. And so it's like pulled up high and she can't use it. But she knows how to party. Every year she has at least one fawn. She had twins last year and twins this year. And right now they're in that overlap phase where last year's fawns haven't left yet, but they're about to. So she actually has four deer in her little posse going with her everywhere.
Nice. So what you're saying is basically Boulder is now the Wonderland, right?
Yes.
Jeff in the Wonderland?
Yes, that's pretty much it. I am, however, disappointed in the lame doe and all of her fawns, because I had decided that I wanted to grow some beans. And so I planted seeds and I had the bean teepee set up and everything, and they were growing, and now I don't have any beans, but the deer sure are happy because they had a really nice bean dinner the other night.
They're lucky they're not magic beans.
Yes.
Did they meet the giant?
No, sadly. Well, or probably that's probably for the best, because deer are actually pretty mean animals. So if they were bigger, they'd be a real problem. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, so that's the wildlife update. I have not personally seen any of the deer, bears or mountain lions that people are claiming are roaming around town. So those are all unconfirmed. All right. So who has the first story for today? Okay. And that's this week's show. Thanks for tuning in, everyone.
It just took a second.
Hang on. I've got one. I can't well, make any windows well, come well, up.
Well, but well Patrice prepared. Beat you to the punch.
So mine is a physics story. Some of you might be aware of this really smart guy called Albert Einstein, like lived about 100 years ago. Never heard of him. Yeah. And like his very famous E=mc², like formula. So one thing Einstein like proved or showed, or well, at least theoretically showed, and then later was proven, is that you can turn matter into energy, or you can turn matter into photons, which is what the sun does, for example. And I think like in the 70s or something that was proven, but it was very hard to do the opposite. I mean, despite the fact that we know it can be done. I mean, at least on paper, we knew it could be done. Like if we can turn matter into photons, we should be able to turn photons into matter.
But this is how a transporter works.
In part, yes.
Yeah. See, I'm excited. That's what this says to me. If we're turning matter into light and then back again, this is transporter.
Yeah. So there was a review of like all the... There's like a special collider that he used, a lot of that produced for other experiments a lot of data, where they basically crashed photons into each other, like sped them up and then crashed them into each other. And they were able to show that that actually created matter, like a proton and I think a neutron or like something like that. So, yeah, I mean, something that it was very, very hard and we had never, like, we could never figure out how to do, finally has been proven. I mean, as I said, it was kind of obvious. In a sense, I mean, if we hadn't been able to do it, that would have caused a lot of questions.
Mm-hmm.
Because that would probably mean that at least in some aspects, Einstein was wrong. But now that we have that, we're sure. So it took us only 105 years to do that.
So did they say, I mean, aside from the cool uses that we can see, you know, beaming up to the Enterprise, but what is their actual use cases that they have in mind?
I'm not aware of any particular use cases. I think this was more a thing of, okay, we know it must be possible, so let's prove it is.
Okay, got it.
But I mean, in theory, you're not wrong. I mean, if we can turn energy, which like protons are, into matter, I would say something like replicators, for example, might be a possibility.
That's dope. And then, of course, you have to be able to then make your tea, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and then your food.
Preferably
next.
Earl Grey.
Yeah.
Hot.
Yeah, hot. I mean, hot would be nice, but I'll take, well, no. Cold Earl Grey is not that great.
Well, you know, if we get to the point where we can actually do this on a practical level, where mm-hmm. we're converting light into matter, there's an energy transference, which means that you could use part of that to capture the heat that's released,
mm-hmm.
and use it to make that tea hot.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, once we can do that. By the way, I said it was a neutron and a positron. It was actually a electron and a positron. So, not well, that physics that we have any idea about physics or that we even know what we're talking about. But yeah, as I said, I just found this to be, as I said, an interesting proof that, I mean, I don't know why it took so long. I mean,
yeah, that is kind of odd. Something that's been in existence for so long, the theory of it.
Yeah. I think
they made stuff out of light. How long would it take you to do that? It's I can't believe it took so long.
Well, I guess that's the question. When did they start the attempt?
Something out of light just appear. Come on. That's amazing. But
what if they started the attempt yesterday and they figured it out today?
No.
Like, oh, by the way.
Oh, by the way.
Yeah, I've only just heard it's a thing. I might have something for you tomorrow afternoon. Just leave it with me.
I think it has something to do with it's easier to smash like atoms into each other, so matter, than it is to do protons. Because, you know, protons don't have mass. It's light. So that's harder to, like, I think we had to figure out how to do that first before we could prove that, whereas like smashing atoms into each other we've been doing for quite a while.
Well, realistically we've been doing it for millennia, because
that's true.
You can pick up a rock, that's a bunch of atoms.
That's true. Yeah, but in a controlled, and I mean all those, like the LHC and all the previous iterations of colliders, I mean they've been around for quite a while.
Very cool.
It's there. I did see a program on TV a while ago where they focused a very strong laser through one gap, and the light ended up one side or another, depending on all sorts of things. And it like blew my mind mm-hmm. that the light would go, it would go one side or the other, and they couldn't predict it, or it could go both, and it would never, I can't even describe the experiment now, but it absolutely done my mind. The fact that this light photon could either appear in one place or another.
Yeah, I think that was the proof that photons or light can be bent by gravity.
Yeah, that's the light slit experiment, where the light shows up on one side or the other, but sometimes both.
Mm. Yeah.
And
no one could explain it.
When, yeah. Mm. Which is pretty cool too.
Yes.
All right. So now I'm curious, how much energy does it take to take photons and slam them together to convert them into matter?
I don't know.
I don't think it matters. I don't think it matters.
Probably quite a bit. I mean, I'm guessing quite a bit because, I mean, you need a vacuum, you need like strong magnets and whatnot. So probably quite a bit of energy.
Yeah, so it's not like this is going to end up turning into something that we can use for more than proving a theory at this point.
At this point, yes, but I mean, who knows what we can, like, now that, I mean, as I said, we've known it's in theory possible, but now that we do, I mean, who's to say that we can't figure out a better way of doing it?
Like, and turn it into something that we can use in a practical mm-hmm. sense.
Yeah.
Which would be pretty cool. Working, and Rich, I'm thinking of you in the transporter.
Yeah. I mean, we're working on fusion, which is something that at some point we didn't know was even I mean, we didn't understand it was possible. Like, it was happening because it's what our sun does, but we didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. This is very cool. All right. Who has the next? We don't have any other stories in yet. All right, who has the next story? Rich, it's all you.
It's all me. Okay, so PayPal have announced this week, I can't find the story now, I've lost it, that we will be able to now buy cryptocurrency through PayPal and the PayPal app, which is, this is interestingly tight. I've started buying cryptocurrency, everyone. It's kind of fun. I've got more money now than when I started, so I'm kind of into it. And the news that you can now do it through PayPal is kind of interesting, because this means that lots of normal people who've never thought of doing something like this might well start having a go at it. And if more people buy cryptocurrency, then that means it becomes more valuable.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, so far it has been kind of a... I mean, there were some other apps that were offering it or started offering it. But I mean, so far it's been a niche market, like for people like you who know how it works and can set up a wallet, or at least
I know how it works. I said I'd bought some. How it works is a complete mystery to me.
Well, you at least have the technical understanding that is required to buy. So
that's it. Exactly. I can decide I'm going to buy some cryptocurrency, go out and find an app. And I'm using Coinbase Pro at the moment, mm-hmm. but that is a specific crypto app. This is PayPal. And, okay. You know, my mum has PayPal and that sort of thing. So I'm interested to see how well this goes. I'm sure PayPal will do very well out of it.
Yeah. This is really good for removing a huge barrier to entry for folks to get into cryptocurrencies. I agree with that. Because even myself, I mean, you know, I just bought my first piece of cryptocurrency like maybe a month ago. And I was talking to my buddies, like, which app do I use and how do I? So the interesting thing will be to see if they allow you to obviously buy partial, you know, instead of, because obviously some of the stuff is super expensive. So hopefully they support.
According to this, you'll be able to buy from as little as a pound.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay, so that's really good then.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then
They're doing Bitcoin, Ethereum, Litecoin, and Bitcoin Cash.
Very good.
So you don't need to have $30,000 to buy full on Bitcoin.
Like, I don't want to sell my truck to get one. Right. But yeah, so really, really cool.
How heavy is Bitcoin if you're buying a whole pound of it?
I'm really wondering whether PayPal will also integrate that into their, like, the seller side, so that, like, you could, like, I mean, you today you can pay with PayPal on like a million billion websites,
and retailers.
Why wouldn't yeah.
Oh God, yeah. If they let you pay with Bitcoin, that would be huge.
Yeah, exactly. Like, why mm-hmm. wouldn't they do that?
Well, and isn't Square getting into this also?
Probably. I mean,
probably.
There's so many companies getting into it right now. Like, even I think, wasn't Visa or MasterCard just announced that they're like looking into it? And
I would say Visa and MasterCard have to be seriously looking into it, because this is the thing that brings those two companies down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't need them anymore if there's Bitcoin.
Yeah. The funny thing is, like, when you look at electric cars, all the regular gas companies just did everything in their power to fight against it. And then you look at, you know, money and digital money, and the credit card companies are like, oh, no, we're not waiting. We're going to embrace it instead. That's pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if anybody is fighting it, it's the government.
Yeah.
For obvious reasons.
Government's fighting cryptocurrency, I think, is just part of a transition where eventually governments will manage cryptocurrencies in the same way they're managing the traditional money systems that we're using today.
Yeah.
Which also means that the whole concept of anonymous transactions is ultimately kind of a pipe dream. That's
gonna go away. Like, I think the EU is already looking into that. I'm pretty sure the US as well. Like, requiring basically that transaction can be like routed back to you as a person.
Mm-hmm.
Like with a bank account. I mean, the bank account has a number.
Right.
Like, on the transaction level, nobody knows who that is. But the bank knows who you are, like who that number belongs to, and through that, they can figure it out.
Yep. And I did look up what Square is doing, and they're making a transaction system for Bitcoin. So you can have your Square wallet with your cryptocurrency and buy and sell through that.
It's interesting to see how it'll go, because it's great for money laundering. And this is one of the big problems. I've learned in when I got into it, one of the big crypto companies, Binance, is banned from operating in this country because they will not comply with money laundering regulations and various things like that. It's so good for doing that. And I think in the US and a couple of other countries, you can already get a bank a credit card, whatever, that is linked to your Binance account so that you could have God knows how much money and it never touch a bank account or tax records or anything else. And it came from where? It just sits in this magical crypto wallet online somewhere and no one knows what's in it.
I'm not so sure it's that great for money laundering, because I mean, there's a public ledger where you can see how much money someone has. I mean, you might have to figure out who that person is, but you can see how much is in there. What it's great for is like any financing of, I don't know, terrorism or whatever.
Because you can send
massive amounts of money from A to B, and as long as nobody knows who A and B are, like, you're out of luck.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
But there are lots of other fun uses for cryptocurrency as well.
For sure.
So, you know, it's not all terrorism and money laundering.
No, for sure.
Just some of it. Yeah. But
that's the reason why it will go away and why it probably has to go away.
Yeah. Well, I guess from the standpoint of taking large sums of money and buying Bitcoin, there's not really any regulation to say, okay, you can only buy under 10,000 Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
So, You know, if you take money that was gotten illegally, but you transfer it to Bitcoin and then you can spend that Bitcoin anywhere, then that's where the laundering comes in, right? You can buy things through that without disclosing where the original money came from.
Yeah, but usually laundering, I mean, the whole reason behind laundering is to like make it disappear in the mass of all the other stuff. that's happening, and that gets
well. That's more difficult. That's because of how it works today, right? Because you have this cash, and you have it legally, and then you need to funnel it into a legitimate business so you can explain why you have this cash. But there's nothing to explain in Bitcoin, so you kind of eliminate that whole need because it's in Bitcoin, and you don't need to explain anything. It's just there, and like nobody cares where it came from.
Yeah, I said, but you can still see it. Like, I mean, if you have a Bitcoin wallet, and I can, I mean, I don't know that it's yours, but I can see it growing.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Like, but nobody's going to ask you why you have so much money in your wallet.
Well, because they don't know. I mean, until they figure it out, they don't know who you are.
But even if they knew who you were, would they ask you?
I'm pretty sure they would ask the question, because I mean, if you had, like, if you had, I don't know, 10 billion in Bitcoin all of a sudden, and they know it's your wallet, for sure someone would ask.
I don't know.
I said, if they know it's you.
Once you funnel it in through one account, you push it out into like three or four other accounts and just kind of move it out into different accounts and kind of spread it out.
Yeah.
Break it apart, put it back together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that, now that's something
that
is
already happening today. Like, there are people that are, I think, like digital, was it Bitcoin forensics? I don't know. I don't remember. Blockchain forensics, something like that. That, like, there are people specialized to figure out, like, how, like, money went from A to B, like, where it ended up. And they know, okay, it went through the, like, those thousand accounts, and then at the end of the day, it ended up here. And they can usually even geolocate and say, okay, it ended up in, I don't know, some country. They don't know who has it, but they can, based on where, like, the internet traffic for that is going on, they can at least say, okay, it ended up in, I don't know, Southeast Asia somewhere. So that is possible. And in some cases, they have been able to figure out who owns that. Usually,
well, my guess is if you're like running it through PayPal, it'd be pretty easy for them to figure out.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. Yeah, as I said, not through the wallet itself, but through like access logs and so on. Like if someone accesses that wallet or something, they might be able to trace that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind.
Because everything is public, you can trace it. Like that's part of the reason why it's so great. Like everybody can see it. Like nobody knows it's yours, but everybody can see it.
Yeah, I like the lack of control, but definitely, you know, the more, you know, you people want to feel like things are secure as well, right? If you're gonna decentralize this money, you got to get more people on it, and then to get more people on it, you definitely need to make sure that, you know, people are feel like they're secure and things are safe and they're not contributing to anything negative.
Yeah, and that's kind of part of the problem. I mean, there have been some. Wasn't it Silk Road where money basically disappeared?
Right. Yeah. It would go into cryptocurrency and then it was just gone.
Yeah. Yeah. And there have been like pretty big hacks of what was it, Mt. Gox, I think, where basically hacked it and then just took all the Bitcoin. And I mean, there was nothing you could do about it because it's gone. There's no transaction that can be rolled back or anything like that.
Yep. Yeah, that's one place where saying, well, but you know, it's all recorded in the blockchain, so that makes it safe. Well, doesn't make it safe. It means you can see what has happened.
Yeah. You and know what case, happened, you just don't know.
Yeah. So it was documented, it was all gone.
Yeah. Yeah, there have been some examples where like people installed like fake wallet apps on their phones and basically took all the Bitcoin in there.
Yeah.
I think there are definitely some precautions you need to take. I mean, two-factor authentication, to say the least.
Right.
And all that kind of thing. Yeah. Anonymous emails and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. I have a wallet on a USB stick somewhere in this office. That,
don't forget the password for it.
I've got it in 1Password, so I'm good.
Okay.
Yeah. So when I find it, I can. I literally have no idea how much Bitcoin is in that. It's not very much, but still, it'd be nice to find that thing and see, because until I do. I mean, it's not like at some point the percentage of Bitcoin I have, because it's not being used, gets rolled back into the big pool. That's it. It's out of circulation.
Mm-hmm.
And until I find my little, oh wait, Mueller's got it. What the hell? What the hell? Well, he doesn't have the password. So at least there's that. Yeah. So good news, Mueller. Neither of us can get the money off that wallet.
I cracked it.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, yeah. Wasn't there someone who had like a, wasn't it even like a specialized Bitcoin hard drive wallet thing that he forgot the password for?
Yeah.
And he had a lot on it.
And he was at like 7 of 9 event attempts or something. Like, I wonder what happened to that guy.
Yeah, me too.
There was a guy who didn't lose his, and he went to the tip and he tried to look, dig through all the rubbish. So he threw it away. Well, the thing is, he got all this crypto from the early days, and it wasn't worth money then. But then suddenly he realized it's worth a lot of money.
Mm.
Never found it, I don't think.
Yeah.
I wish I had bought Bitcoin when we had the customer back when it was like $8 or something.
Oh, that
we literally
had
the bank that wanted to get into crypto mining, and like if we had bought some then.
But yeah, well,
we didn't.
Well,
we've done this story. Yeah. Move on.
Good story.
I'm just feeling bad about Patrice missing out on all that Bitcoin. Hmm. All right, Chris, you have the next story.
Yeah. So, my story is, I'm obviously still a gamer, and Microsoft announced that they were that they're bringing the cloud gaming system that they're building out into directly to the Xbox Series X and Series S. So, if people aren't familiar, basically with the cloud gaming, it allows these games to be hosted in the cloud rather than being fully installed on the device, and which then allows folks to play these games on multiple devices, phones, computers, laptops, tablets, whatever. It's the same game. It just doesn't, your experience doesn't change because everything is hosted for you. And we talked about this last night, where, you know, the big thing I see that people probably aren't talking about is the ability to maybe reduce the amount of cheating and DDoSing that occurs in games. Because even myself, as old as I am now and nowhere near the gamer I was when I was younger, people still DDoS me. And so I'll be in the middle of a patch and I'm getting booted out of the game. So people still get salty. They still catch your IP address and start booting you out of games just so they can win a damn video, damn video match. So, with everything being hosted, I would assume that would then, a lot of that would go away. But the other thing I didn't even think about, which was the obvious part of it, was the fact that, one of the first games Microsoft says they intend to offer up there is their flight simulator. And if I remember correctly, that flight simulator is a massive, massive game. Mm-hmm. And it takes time to download. And even the main game I play, Destiny, I think it's up to about 70 gigs now.
Holy
crap. In size. And so just being able to not have to download all of that, even though these guys have been doing a better job allowing you to download the game early, and then on day one, you just update the bits as opposed to trying to download everybody trying to get the download at the mm-hmm. same time. So they've been doing good with that, but just eliminating that whole process altogether and just being able to connect directly to a cloud storage and then be able to play these games is also appealing to me. So even though a lot of people found this to be a less than or very underwhelming announcement, I the possibilities of it and the fact that it is becoming reality is still kind of exciting to me.
And it's also going to level up the game, isn't it? Because I mean, for say Microsoft Flight Simulator, you need a beefy computer for that.
So imagine being able to, while you're flying, to be flying.
Oh, yeah.
especially with the shortage of graphics cards at the moment. I mean, if you want to play some of these games, you need a really good graphics card. But you could play these on an entry-level graphics card with this, surely. So it's going to even everyone out.
Yeah, the latency will be interesting to see how they combat that, or if it's even noticeable enough to worry about it. And then the other thing is what you mentioned with the graphics cards, the other side of that, right? If this really takes off and you get these first-class gear games in there, is there going to be a need for folks to be buying these massive PCs and these massive graphic cards anymore?
I think at that point, the more important thing would be a really fast internet connection.
Right, right. You know, if there's no advantage to the machine anymore because it's all hosted, you know, that could shift up the market big time.
I still think that streaming games needs to get better than it is. Like, I've been trying Google Stadia again because I got the fancy new internet connection, and it's still unplayable.
Yeah, I've heard mixed reviews about that. So,
yeah, it's just the lag is terrible, and I'm on a 220 megabit internet connection now. It should be working. And it's,
now, have you noticed a difference between different games that you play, or is it every game has the same lag in it?
Actually, you know, it does vary from game to game. Mm. And I'm trying to play Far Cry New Dawn. That was the last one I was trying to play on it. And that's just, you've got no chance with that whatsoever. F1 2020 was also difficult. Sniper Elite 4, that seemed to work okay.
Yeah,
that was the first one I played, and that kind of pulled me in. But after that,
one of the first real reviews that I saw of that Stadia was a streamer that was talking about how to get away from the massive amount of cheating that is on these PC games is that he started using Stadia. So he started because they do, you know, they have cross play now. So your account follows you no matter the platform you play on. So on the competitive side of things, when it was when the competitive modes come up on the weekends, he would just play on Stadia instead. And, you know, because console is less likely to see like the in-game cheating, right? There's still folks that could potentially use aimbot hardware and DDoSing and stuff like that. But you're seeing, you know, characters flying across the screen and, you know, just spamming weapons all over the place and just doing all kinds of crazy things that you would never be able to do on a console. So, Stadia is kind of, the idea of it is interesting to me nonetheless. And now that Destiny or Bungie added crossplay to Stadia, to Destiny 2, you're seeing matches where you have Stadia people and PlayStation people and Xbox people all on the same, in the same game or in the same match.
Now,
You know what game would get me on the platform?
Which one?
Age of Empires.
Age of Empires, okay.
Yeah, there's a new Age of Empires coming, and like, I'm not into gaming, but that one is interesting, but it's not on a Mac, so I'm not getting a Windows PC.
Now, as someone who's not anything more than a casual gamer, like very casual gamer, Chris, what you just described with all these people cheating in these collaborative games, I don't get what is the value in cheating like that.
So it's interesting because I always wonder about that as well. It's like, if I lose a match, I lose a match. And if I win, I'm obviously excited. If I lose, I'm disappointed. And I try to figure out what happened. But that FOMO, I think, is a lot more heavy than we even realize or think about. And for folks that don't understand that acronym, it's that fear of missing out, right? Because the way these games are designed, right, is to, in order to keep you engaged, there is content that you have to earn. And to earn that content, they're usually behind the harder activities in the game. And there's always a player versus engine version of these weapons where you just play against the computer and, you know, do the hard stuff there. And then there's this one where it's PvP, where player versus player, where you have to be in, you know, the top of the top to get these same weapons. And so The amount of, and just speaking with Destiny alone, that it's created a sub market within the game, right? Because you now have people offering their services where they take over your account and they'll take your character through these hard content for you. And then, or they'll grind out for hours and hours until they earn a weapon that you're looking for, or they'll take you through the player versus player stuff because they're good enough to do it. But then when you think about, okay, I have 30, 40, 50 accounts that want me to take their, you know, their characters to this ultimate content, then you can see like, here's a good reason for us to cheat, because the faster I can do it, the more money I can make. Right. So they just cheat their way all the way through. So I think that accounts for a lot of the cheaters. I don't know if the more of the casual players are in there. I think it's a lot of these guys that are making money off of this. You do have some. So Bungie themselves had gone after some of the manufacturers of this cheating software, and they're suing them in court right now. Mm-hmm. And the funny part of that was when you started to see the comments of the people that actually used the cheats, and they were just complaining that, oh, well, the game's not going to be fun anymore and nobody's going to play the game. And it's just like, are you kidding me? You actually thought the game was fun because you were cheating? So there's that too. I think it's a mix.
So there are probably some people, for them it's more about like bragging rights, like saying, hey, look what I can do.
Yeah. Like, yeah. And the other part of it too, right, is you've actually in the last couple of months, there have been streamers that have been caught cheating. So there's those guys too, right? These are streamers. They have a fan base. They're on every week. And what happened was one of them at least was playing, and I guess he forgot to turn his cheat off. So he was streaming live and he forgot to turn the cheat off. And it was another guy that was actually banned directly from Bungie. And he started complaining. He was like, oh, my account got banned and blah, 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 blah. This is not fair. You know, I didn't even cheat. And there's other people that cheat and they don't get banned. And he made such a big deal about it that Bungie actually called him out and said, listen, we didn't want to comment on this, but not only do we know that you were cheating and we have your account, we actually have the other account that you were using to cheat with too. So we banned both of your accounts, and that just ruined him, you know? And like, so every other streamer starts commenting, and a lot of people knew the guy and were friends with him and had played with them. I played with them, and they're like, yeah, we're done with this cheating stuff, you know? So it exists. And I think there's a variety of reasons. I think probably most of them though are the ones that are actually making money from taking other people's characters to these pinnacle events so they can have the top tier weapons and stuff. And I don't know how you get those weapons and, you know, as an individual player and you're like, oh yeah, I got this top weapon and somebody else got it for you. You know, I can see for folks that don't have time to play, I don't care about them. You know, you pay somebody to do your account, you get a friend to do it for you. That's all good. You know what I mean? But it's just like these individual
ones. But that's not playing.
What's the point?
Well, you know, to be honest with you, there's all level of the gamers, right? And unfortunately, Bungie has to do a better job with balancing the grind part of the game. So where you might have to do something repeatedly over and over and over and over again. And they know that because they're working on changing a lot of the underlying system to, you know, to remove a lot of that grind. Some people like to enjoy the game and they just don't want to do that. Like my son wants to play this game with me, but he's like, man, I'm so far behind. The idea that I'm going to have to spend days and days and days just to get to the point where playing with you would be fun is unappealing to me. Yeah. And so there is the casual gamer who wants to enjoy this game. You know what I mean? And until Bungie fixes that on the massive level, you're going to have people that just say, hey, I'll play for you.
Yeah. I mean, the
weird thing that games are the only entertainment medium that lock parts of themselves away from you. If you want to read the last bit of a book, you can just do that. If you want to fast forward the movie, you can do that. If you want to jump to the end of a game, good luck.
You're right. Mm-hmm.
You know,
it's true.
But what about Bungie's anti-cheating software? Doesn't that work?
So they just implemented that. They just implemented after years of streamers and casual gamers complaining about the cheating. they finally introduced an anti-cheat, and it's set to go live, and I think this weekend or next week.
It's been on Halo for months.
Yeah, so it's been on Halo. Well, I guess, you know, so games like Halo, they already know, you know, what's coming. It's the same software that Call of Duty uses. And these guys are implementing it. I think there's some underlining things they need to do with the back end to be able to support the anti-cheats, because apparently this anti-cheat software they're using actually, I guess, loads drivers locally and can then detect certain software that's running and will block you from launching the application if it detects this software. But the other thing is that it's going to block. It's actually going to watch your kill-death ratio. And so it'll say, well, you're a 5.0 KD, and today you're at a 13.0. Something's wrong. It's going to ban that account, right? Hmm. So that's something that's new. So a lot of this stuff is going to go away just based on those two portions of what they're doing, which I think is pretty cool. Obviously, there'll be some people that get banned that probably shouldn't, but it is what it is.
There are sometimes good reasons to cheat. Like, I mean, the only...
I'm like Jeff.
I'm very casual, but I like to play. Like, I haven't played in years, but I like to play Sims. And then Sims, like, part of the fun was the cheats, like getting unlimited money and then building the most insane mansions.
Yeah, to imagine. I think glitches are fine, and as long as it doesn't affect anybody else, who cares, yeah, right?
It's just you. Well, exactly.
But when I'm in a match and I'm like I might spend hours playing like a competitive match, and you know, you have to win for this one. They call it trials, and what it is, you have to win 7 matches in a row without losing to get to the pinnacle content. And you know, you usually get 1 mercy, and so 1 loss, and then that one it gets erased. And after that, you lose. You got to reset your card, and you got to start all over and try again. And these matches are about 5 rounds, 2 minutes each. It can take you hours to go flawless. You know what I mean? I've been to 6 wins and lost on 6 wins and lost my mercy at 6 wins. You know what I mean? And it's devastating, right? So when you go through that, and then I've been through matches where we get to our 6th win and we're like, okay, we just need this 1 more win. Come on, guys, let's get this. And then as we're flying into the match, our best player gets booted out of the match. You know what I mean? That type of stuff is super frustrating. Yeah. You know, so it's like, yeah, so when it doesn't affect anybody, knock yourself out. I don't really care at all. But when you're literally cheating and, you know, messing up somebody else's experience so you can pretend like you did something, that annoys me.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I mean, that's kind of like in the real world. If you're part of, I don't know, a fight or a match of some sort, like soccer or whatever, and you're cheating there, I mean, that's just not fair.
Yeah. Like, yeah, if so you're I'm playing with you.
For yourself somewhere, yeah, who cares?
Like, yeah, who cares? You know, I've used glitches in game, right? Glitches exist, and you're like, oh, you know, I can do this and earn all this material and stuff. Like, I've definitely done that. I've done that in Destiny. You know, I've left my character up in an event that was just I took a rubber band to the controller so it didn't assume that I just didn't, you know, I was AFK, and I went to bed and I woke up and I had all this extra material that I didn't have to do anything for. I just slept. That doesn't affect anybody. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But the other stuff, yeah, that's super.
That's
annoying.
Actually really funny.
You have to use the rubber bands on both sticks, because I guess it does detect if you're just walking in a circle. So you kind of want it to become more random.
Wow. Okay. Next story is Mueller.
Yeah. My story is the fact that I think the robots are out to get us. So apparently in America, the Chevy Bolt batteries were being made in Korea by a robot that wasn't set up properly.
Whoops.
You can go into the story and read it. So it was making the batteries, and they were the soft batteries that you see on when you take the lid off an e-car. And it had put the separators were too close, and the batteries were overheating and bursting into flames. So there's a technical in there, but basically these cars have all now, I think they've recalled every single car that's been made
massive, since massive, they started. massive, I think, multi-billion dollar losses.
Because wow.
Yeah.
I mean, for...
And all thanks to this one robot.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, there's several robots on the line, but they don't know which robot made which battery. So they've had to recall all the batteries and then have to replace all the batteries in the Chevy Bolt. Now, it'd be interesting if this same robot has been making batteries for other makes a car, because I presume these batteries aren't just used by the Chevy Bolt. They probably could be used by a lot of other makes as well. So it'd be quite interesting, the fallout from this story.
Mm.
Technical is in there, but
wow, that's crazy.
Massive fail on the quality control level.
And kind of speaks to not having too much automation. You know what I mean? Yeah, you automate everything. I get it. But human might have been able, maybe one or two slip by, but the whole shipment after shipment after shipment, it probably wouldn't have been the case.
Yeah, I'm not so sure.
You've got to be looking at
the tolerances that they're talking about in the article, like 1 millimeter. I'm not so sure a human would have been able to catch that.
But the testing should be the testing should be there. The quality control should be there. They should be testing at least one area, because there's a factory up the road from me that makes parts for helicopters, and they destroy 99 out of 100 of the parts. Only one part gets through. They test them, and if one part fails in a batch of 100, they scrap the lot. They should be at least doing something, not that quite to that destructive level, but
they need a robot for the quality control.
That's usually what happens. I mean, the tolerances from what I know from manufacturing these days are like less than a millimeter. I mean, they're sometimes like microns. So that should have been detected.
Got the other story, which goes into more technical. If you want to, I'll post that one as well, because that goes into more technical details. How the issue happened. Where's my?
Isn't the Chevy Volt the car that caught fire in someone's garage while it was charging, or was that a different electric car?
There was one story about a Tesla Model Y that turned out to be bogus. Like someone said the car had caught fire, and there was video evidence that it actually the house caught fire before that.
There have actually been
some garages, I think, that were destroyed.
They're actually saying now, until they replace your battery, charge it outside. Don't charge it to 100%. Don't let it drop below 70 miles distance. So obviously don't discharge it too much and don't charge it too much.
Not a bad idea. So,
well, lithium batteries don't have a memory, so you should be able to.
Yeah, it's still recommended for safety reasons to not do that. Most batteries these days actually have the margins already built in. Like zero is not really zero, and 100% is not really 100%.
Well, that's probably firmware rather than the.
That reason, because you don't want to fully or overcharge them, and you don't want to like them to go too low.
This is making me glad that I have my Prius. So, I'm not relying solely on a battery, and I don't have to plug it in. Of course, where I'm living, relying solely on a battery could be a bad thing, because I do winter driving in the mountains, and if you get stuck and all you have for keeping your car functioning while you're stuck in the snow, and I mean there can be stretches of road where you have cars just lined up on the road and they can't go anywhere for hours on end.
Yeah. In those conditions, an electric car would be much better, because if the car is not moving, it's using very, very little power. So it can last like days, weeks sometimes.
In Interesting.
So what, right.
We've had stories here where like Teslas are up in the mountains. They get caught in these snowstorms and the batteries go dead. And now the people are just in a cold car.
Yeah. Okay. I think the big problem there is it's cold. So the batteries aren't at full capacity. And if they're then low because like you haven't charged them fully, like we're not prepared.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I've been very happy with electric cars. So
I put my deposit down on the Ford F-150. So we'll see if I
get one next year.
That's a nice one.
I like how the electric 150 mm-hmm. has that extra trunk in the front.
Yes, that's
cool.
That would solve a huge problem because I have stuff that I would love to keep in my car, like my golf clubs, but I got to keep it in the house because you can't. Even though I have a torno cover for the bed, it leaks. You know what I mean? And so my golf clubs get wet. My golf shoes get wet and I got to clean them, scrub them down. And so being able to have that frunk mm-hmm. and put my golf clubs and other things in there and not have to worry about it is just a huge upgrade for mm-hmm. me. So that even just that alone, you're right, is a super cool feature.
And then the 50 has a lot of power outlets. Like you can literally use it as a workbench basically.
Yeah. I'll never do that, but
you're good. Yeah. You could go camping and just have it as your
My camping consists of multiple batteries and then a giant tent where I can put a full size queen size airbed in. And and most of the time, the first night I sleep in the tent, and the rest of the week I sleep in the truck because I hate being hot. I hate bugs, but I don't mind camping with my friends. But my camping is a little bit different.
Well, it's all about finding the compromises to make it work for you.
Exactly.
You get a Rivian? Because the Rivian has a place you can sleep in the car.
Have you not seen it? A lot of people in Teslas have done that. Like the model, I'm not sure about the Model 3, but the S, the Y, and the X, it's relatively easy to do that.
Yeah, what you do, it's behind the seat, you open it down, and there's a back bit where you can put your stuff, and you can actually literally put a mattress and sleep in the car.
Yeah, the Rivian looks nice. The Rivian does look nice. And I probably would have looked at it I've been waiting for a while for it to announce this truck. And so when they finally did and I liked the way it looked and like what I saw, I was like, all right, I'll go ahead. Because I have a F-150 now, so.
So this will be a nice upgrade for you.
Definitely, definitely.
Awesome. Hey, this show and all the others on the British Tech Network are sponsored by TSO Hosts. So thank you to TSO Hosts for being here for us. Every single week, every single day, because they're providing the hosting we need so that all of the shows that we record are available so that you can go and watch or listen at your leisure. They also give us the bandwidth we need so that we can be streaming to you every week, which is absolutely awesome. And seriously, without them, we would not be here. And Patrice, you mentioned a couple weeks ago, they're upgrading our servers for us, which, holy crap, that's so awesome.
Yeah, we're still waiting for the servers, which should come in any day because they told us that we should move until the 8th. So I've prepared everything, but yeah, we will move.
Awesome. So that'll be very cool. So what TSO Host wants from us is to go out on social media and thank them for supporting us. So go hit Twitter or Facebook, whatever it is that you're into on social media, and give them some online love and thank them for supporting the British Tech Network. That's all they want. But they will also, if you're so inclined, sell you domain names and sell you hosting. So if you need either, then they've got your back. And if you use the discount code BTN20, you get a discount off of your purchase. So that's pretty awesome too. So thank you to TSO Host for that. Also, Iman Max sponsors us, and that's the place to go if you have any Apple gear that needs to be repaired, because first they have Callum working for them and he's the man. That's who you want going inside your Apple gear. And what they do, instead of finding say like a, a broken port on your computer and then just replacing the logic board, they'll replace the broken port, which means that you get back your equipment, not something new or replaced, and there's less waste going out into landfills. So that's pretty awesome. So they will also sell or lease you Apple gear if you need it, which is pretty awesome. And they're just all around nice people. The only downside I have found to Iman Max is that they're on the wrong side of the ocean for me. So I can't use them myself. But hit them up and let them know that you're a BTN fan and they will give you a discount as well. So thank you to Iman Max for sponsoring us. And Patrice, do you mind telling people where they can find the chat?
Yeah, I mean, one, there's a live chat where you can literally, well, right now, while we're recording this, you can come in and talk to us and comment and ask questions and joke and whatnot. And that you can find on chat.britishtechnetwork.com. But if you're listening to this after the fact and you just want to have all the awesome stories that we've talked about and the links to the cool things that are coming in a minute, then you can head over to britishtechnetwork.com/chat, navigate to the 26th of August, 2021, and there you will find everything we've talked about.
Awesome. Thank you for doing that, Patrice. Because clearly I have some sort of mental block that prevents me from ever remembering that URL. So I'm glad you're here. All right. Time for the cool thing. Let's start off with you, Chris. What do you have for us?
So mine is going to be an app, a very simple one, and probably not a big deal to folks on the European side of the house. But for folks on this side, take a look. So I've been getting into woodworking over the last year, making all kinds of furniture and cool little ashtrays and stuff like that. And one of the things I am terrible with is reading like 5/8 and 6/8 and 16ths and all that foolishness because our measuring system is stupid.
Yes,
so
it is.
I got a tape measure that has both inches and millimeters or centimeters actually on it. And that has completely enhanced the accuracy of what I do. But unfortunately, because I spent a lifetime thinking in 2 foot, 4 foot increments, it's kind of hard to just get away from that. So in comes this app called Metric Converter. It's a simple app on iOS, and essentially you can obviously put in your measurements and pick and choose what measurements you want to convert from. So of course, can you do that online? Yes. But the cool thing about this is it allows you to save your favorite conversions. So for me, it's, inches to centimeters, but I also sometimes need to go to millimeters and because I have a different device that does millimeters instead of centimeters. So it makes it easy to kind of just click on the conversion that you want to, that you have saved, and then just click that in and do your thing. Also, I just poured my first epoxy table. It's going to be an end table, one of two. And so being able to convert gallons to liters, because my buckets are in liters, but the epoxy comes in gallons. So, being able to save that and understand what I need to pour for that. So just a simple app, but some cool features on it to help make these tasks that I do on a regular basis more repeatable.
Awesome.
Cool. Wasn't there a spaceship somewhere that was made, and the Americans made it in Imperial and the Europeans made it in metric and it crashed?
actually, that was the EU with the Brits.
Wasn't it the B arc that crashed?
Well, there's also the B arc, you're thinking of the, I think it was the Beagle probe for Mars, and that one surprisingly did not involve the US.
But we're metric in this country, so it shouldn't have affected us.
And Yeah, it shouldn't have.
There's only people like me. Only people like me that still remember Imperial.
Maybe we did make a component for it, but
yeah, I mean, would make sense because the US is like when it comes to spacecraft, pretty advanced.
I'll have to look it up, put it in the Slack room when I find it. I know it was a space project.
Yeah, it was a Mars probe from the EU. Yeah. Patrice, what do you have for us?
So I have to lift that thing up. It's heavy. I have this thing here, which is...
Oh, it's a space rumba.
It's a space rumba, yeah. Space rumba. It is from a company called Roborock. I wanted to buy something frivolous, and I have owned a Roomba like years ago. I won it like 2010 or something, and then had it for 8 years, and then sold it when I moved to the US. So I haven't had a modern like vacuum. So I was looking for something, and I found this thing, and it kind of fit all the builds. It's the Roborock S5 Max. It's a Chinese company, so you have to be like okay with that. But all the reviews, like everywhere, basically are saying if you're not getting a Roomba, get this one. This one was there was a discount, like €100 discount on Amazon. So it was like $429 or something. Usually it's $100 more or €100 more. But it's really good. Like it actually has, and I put it here as well. It has like a mop attachment.
Nice.
So it can even like mop your or clean your apartment. But I'm surprised how good it is. It has a LiDAR system. So it's not the old bump into everything and basically destroy your half your stuff system. It is surprisingly smart how it basically cleans everything. So kind of what it does, it will basically like follow all the edges in the apartment or in the room, and it can detect where's a doorway, and then once it has found all the edges, it basically divides everything into like grid and then cleans, like drives back and forth to clean it, and when it's done it moves on to the next area. So it is actually pretty nice, hasn't gotten stuck anywhere. Obviously you have to remove some cables and stuff, like that simply will, like if you look at the underside, that will basically get sucked in. Okay. Mm-hmm. Something gets sucked in here as well. So that's the only thing you have to always remember. The app is surprisingly good. The instructions are well made. Like it is a really, like it's solid. It's heavy. It's like 7 kilograms or something. It's pretty heavy.
What, the app?
No, not the app. The robot. The app is, as I said, the app is really nice. Like it's, you can go in, you can schedule it, you can like live follow, like it shows you basically like a live view of like the apartment and like how it's cleaning and so on. I actually have a photo, maybe I'll share it in a second on screen. But it's just a good app, and it's a good robot, and it does the job, and it actually, I'm super happy with the results. I mean, I hate cleaning, so.
How much was it?
I think in dollars it's $550.
Okay.
Yeah, there are different versions, different sections, and whatever.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, but it's like this one came like Wirecutter. I think they even recommended the like slightly cheaper and smaller version, because they said it does everything. It does everything well, and the extras aren't worth it. But I couldn't even find the S4, so I got the S5. So cool. Yeah, my pick. Really good bad robot.
Cool.
Oh, can it go into space?
If you can get it up there, probably yes.
Sure.
It's no good.
Use it to clean up some of that orbital debris. Yeah, all right, Rich, what do you have?
I've got a couple of picks this week. So a little one and a bigger one. The little one is, you might remember last time I was on the show, I just switched ISPs. I had a new Wi-Fi hub, and the Wi-Fi was a bit iffy at best. And I was looking at the new Eero system to sort of deal with that. They're £279. They're actually on offer at the moment, down to £209. However, 20 meters of Cat 7 cables, about £15. Mm-hmm. So I've greatly recommend 50 meters of seven cable. Sorry, 20 meters. It's not elegant. It's not nice. It's a mess. It's running up the stairs, but I don't care because it wasn't 280 pounds. So that solved a bit of a problem. And the internet has been pretty solid tonight. The other thing is, and it looks like it's available for pre-order, the Retro Games Limited A500 mini console, which is, you're familiar with the world of mini consoles. We've had a mini NES, a mini SNES, there's been a mini Commodore 64. Well, this is the mini Amiga 500. And I'm quite excited for this, because this is a wonderful slice of my childhood, much more than anything from Nintendo or Sega or anyone like that. It's not out yet, and they're saying it actually 31st of March next year, so I might be getting in a bit early with this. But it looks like an Amiga, and it has Alien Breed and Another World and Simon the Sorcerer and Worms and lots of other games preloaded onto it. It comes with a Commodore-style controller that looks like the one from the CD32 and an Amiga mouse. And most crucially, you can play your pirated games on it from a memory stick, which is how we did it back in the day with the Amiga. I'm sure somebody...
Android-powered?
Probably, I don't know. But I don't know. It plays Amiga games. That's what it does. I just remember, you know, back in the day, it was all, you'd bring your box of discs to school, and you'd swap your box of discs with all your friends and go home and copy everything that night and bring them all back the next day. And everyone had every game. It was incredible. It's not like it is now. And yeah, this is going to be a good bit of fun. I might lose weeks of my life to this.
But what a great way to lose that time.
I know, right? I know. Oh, I can play Cannon Fodder again. Just remember that one.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right, Muller, what do you have?
Will you be able to cheat? I've got, I want to bring up audiobooks, one particular book, but has everyone noticed that Audible has now got lots of free books available? So there's absolutely loads and loads of free books now. But the one I've chosen is a paid for one, which I'm going to get next month. Billy Connolly. I don't know I know he's reasonably famous in America. He's certainly married to an American, but that's what I'm looking forward to. But Billy Connolly's latest autobiography, which I imagine is going to probably be his last, as he's not very well at the moment, but he's in the last stages of his Parkinson's. So I'm looking forward to buying that one. But I'm also saying, have a look at Audible if you're a subscriber. There's absolutely hundreds of free books. I got 2001 Space Odyssey for free.
Nice.
And there's loads of others.
Mm-hmm.
That's mine.
Awesome. Okay. Mine, real quick, is a very simple little menu bar add-on for macOS called Hot. And it's from iMazing. And what it does, wow, excuse me. What it does is it shows you the CPU temperature on your Mac, and it shows you if any throttling is happening because of the temperature. So like I can see right now on my Mac, I'm actually being throttled because my Mac is running pretty hot right now. So I'm at 70% of CPU performance as opposed to 100%. And it gives you a nice little chart so that you can, or graph, so you can see over time what's happening with your processor. And that's it. It's just a cool little tool that keeps you on top of what's going on with the temperature on your Mac. And free. So totally worth the price.
Oh.
All right. So... we have made it to the end of the show, which means it's time to find out where to find everyone. Chris, where can people get a hold of you?
Hey, folks, you can always come check your boy out on the SMR podcast. We record every week, me and my two homies, talking tech, some social stuff, whatever we get into. And tomorrow, I actually did a barbecue podcast you know, it's on the DTNS network. So they introduced kind of like an experimental week where they, people can kind of try out different ideas on doing podcasts. And I certainly been thinking about, especially having done the show with Patrice, considered doing one all around barbecue and the tech we use to facilitate it. So that should be released on the DTNS feed tomorrow. So you can check that out as well. Twitter, Big Chris Ashley, Instagram, whatever. Come find me. Come holler at me.
Awesome. All right, Patrice.
I'm hungry again. Thank you. Chris always makes me hungry with all of this like awesome barbecue. I will have to listen to that. Yeah, you can find me here every week on The Big Show every Thursday, on The Mac Show every Friday with lovely Jeff Gamet and some other lovely people. You can find all the like projects and social media links and just everything I'm doing at thepatrice.com. Like, there's only one. And my podcast is Foodie Flashback, where I talk to interesting people like Chris and like Jeff, and I haven't talked to Muller and Rich yet, so I'll have to schedule that, about food and just everything that goes with that. And yeah, that is at foodieflashback.com.
Awesome. Okay, Rich, where can people find you?
You can find me on my YouTube channel, Early Morning Barking, or on the website, earlymorningbarking.com, or the Twitter feed at Barking.
Cool. And Muller, where can people get a hold of you?
Muller Biker on Twitter or in the Slack room. I think I'm Muller Biker on Instagram as well, but I don't use that much.
Okay. And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram. I am Jay Gamet on both places. My YouTube channel, youtube.com/JayGamet. Here on Thursdays on The Big Show, Fridays on The Mac Show, most Tuesdays on Mac Voices Live. And last week and this week, I've done a few episodes of Daily Observations for Mac Observer. And I did this week's Apple Context Machine with Mac Observer. Charlotte Henry is out on vacation, so I swung back by my old stomping grounds, and I've been helping him out. So that's been kind of fun. And thank you to all of you for being such an awesome panel today. And this has been absolutely great. So I am looking forward to the next few weeks. Without you, and not because he won't be here, but because it's fun to get to sit in his chair sometimes and just to be able to really focus on all of you, which is so cool. And thank you to all of you that are participating live. Every single one of you rocks. And for all of you that are watching or listening later, thank you for being part of this as well. I love every single one of you. And everyone have an awesome rest of the week and weekend, and don't forget to tune in tomorrow for the Mac Show. So thanks for being here, and we'll see you next time.